Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Elliot Branch. Elliot is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Acquisition and Procurement, and Elliot is the senior career civilian responsible for acquisition, contracting, and policy that governs the Navy's acquisition programs. Everything, right? From professional services to buying ships and all that stuff, right, Elliot?
If we buy it, I guess I have a hand in it.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Roger.
Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation today. It should be fun. Elliot, you always have some great insights with regard to procurement and what's going on with it. And, you know, first, I thought we'll just open up big picture and talk about the budget, not the details of the budget, but what does it mean for procurement from your perspective? What are you seeing? How is the Navy responding? What are you doing to address some of the budget challenges?
Well, these are pretty turbulent times right now. And not only are we facing sequester, but also with the discussions going on the Hill today, you know, we've operated under a continuing resolution for a good part of this fiscal year. I think most people foresee us operating under a continuing resolution for the first part of next year. So for us, I think it is really a matter of emphasis. So our emphasis is on the CNO's, you know, 3 points. So, you know, war fighting first, forward deployed, and being ready. So, you know, our focus is ensuring that we maintain the capability of our war fighters on a global basis, so we don't have to use those capabilities.
Right, and so you're prioritizing. Obviously, you have to in this environment. I mean, you always should be prioritizing, right? But more so than ever, I think, from a government perspective, thinking about core mission, and that's supporting the warfighter. And you know,
I think we're more focused than perhaps we are on those three priorities. And my boss, Sean Stackley, who is our assistant secretary, says that the last thing we will do is we will cut capability. So as we look at procurements, you know, throughout the system, the focus is on maintaining that capability. The focus is on prioritizing that and those needs first, and getting to then those decisions from a procurement perspective that will help us maintain capability going forward in the future.
And how is that sort of translating in the contracts? Are contracts in turn? You know, I'm trying to figure out how to ask the question, but you know, I've things slowed down in some areas while to prioritize other areas. Are there options, whether they're being exercised or not, or changes in scope, that sort of thing?
Well, at the beginning of the year, when we were looking at sequestration, there was a fairly senior look at all contracting actions over certain dollar values. My boss was looking at those personally. As we got a continuing resolution, which gave us an authorization bill, he called in his senior acquisition leaders and said, okay, we have a bill now. We have sequestration. What's your plan to execute this year? And as he's seen those plans and move forward, he's allowing his folks to execute their procurements and their contracts as long as they're executing according to plan. Now, as we go into the fourth quarter, I think that we're going to be taking a hard look, because as you well know, we kind of get to that end of the year spending uplift. So we'll be taking a very, very careful look there to make sure that we're still executing according to plan and spending money on those three priorities.
Right. And you know, what I've heard from across government is that that this year, you know, because of the continuing resolutions, because of sequestration, the delays and, you know, money being allocated to programs and that sort of thing, and figuring out where you can go, means that this, you know, sort of second half of the fiscal year is going to be more challenging than ever in terms of, you know, first, what you mentioned, addressing, you know, what need to be met fundamentally to meet mission, but also in terms of, to the extent that money is allocated to programs, having to be able to execute. Is that, you know, in a timely manner, sort of like a floodgate sort of I don't want to.
Well, I wouldn't say that. You know, I have to smile at the question because I believe this business is always challenging. You know, when you work in an institution that spends $93 billion a year, it's never easy. So is it going to be a little more challenging because of the time compression? Sure, it'll be a little more challenging. But we're challenged every day. And I go back to this. So our mission is to support the warfighter while looking out for the interest of the taxpayer, and that's always a challenging endeavor.
Well, why don't we talk a little bit about some of these issues that have been floating around that you hear a lot about, and just get some of your take on it, or how the Navy is viewing things a little bit. But you know, one of the things that has got a lot of conversation in the procurement community is a perception or reality, I don't know which it is, but that low cost, technically acceptable has, you know, essentially taken the field and there's no more best value. And I'd like to get your sense on that.
I don't think that's the case. A couple of things. One is Mr. Kendall, who is our Undersecretary for Defense Acquisition Technology and Logistics, has recently released his Better Buying Power 2.0 policy paper. And two of the areas in there that are specifically addressed are best value as well as low price technically acceptable. So I think the emphasis is on doing what makes sense. So what he's asked the acquisition community across the DOD at least to do is to take a step back, to understand the principles of both of those methods. And when I say both of those methods, I mean the price technical trade-off, right, as well as the low price technically acceptable, and ask a very, very easy, simple question, not necessarily an easy one, but a simple question. When is it most appropriate to use each one of those methods? And we're still using both of those methods, and we're using the one that we believe is most appropriate for the circumstances.
Right. That gets, to me, and it'd be interesting, you think, it gets back to the requirements development, right? What are you buying? What is it? What are you going to do with it? And articulating that, that translates into that evaluation criteria. Is that fair to say?
Well, I think it's fair to say that, but I also think it's important for everybody to understand this idea of value. So I will give you an example out of my personal life. My children attended T.C. Williams High School in Alexandria, Virginia, and the younger two, I have three, were in an experimental program where every kid got a laptop. And it was really fascinating to look at these laptops because you bring them home and they could do absolutely nothing with them. And when you talk to the school administrators, you know, their point was, we have to worry about security. We have to worry about configuration control. We have to worry about reliability. So, no, we're not going to let you attach printers to them. No, we're not going to let you attach them to your home network. No, we're not going to let you, attach them to the Internet outside of school. And the thing that became crucial.
Well, Elliot, I have to tell you, that sounds like it's almost like it was a typewriter, right?
Well, in many senses, it was. It was a very, very efficient way of taking the standards of learning exams that we give in Virginia.
Yep, that's right.
And connecting to them in school. But the epiphany that I got out of that was, as powerful as these machines are, that there are just some environments where you want them to do one, two, or three things very, very well, with the exclusion of almost everything else that they can do. So in a situation like that, we're talking low price technically acceptable, because the school system was basically saying, look, I want these machines to be able to connect to the network, and I want them to be able to do certain things connected to the network. I want to be able to administer exams on these machines, and I want to do that in the safest possible enclave that I can. So all the other things that people were bringing in, saying, well, you can do these with the machines, and we can bring this software in, and we can do these wonderful things, and you should pay us a premium for these, the school system was going, no, we want to do two or three things really well. So there's just an example, you know, outside of, the federal government, where low price technically acceptable was clearly a very, very good strategy. On the other hand, when we bring things that when vendors bring things to the table that the government, the taxpayer, can get some value out of, best value or price technical trade-off is the way to go. Always was and still is.
Well, Elliot, we do have to take our break right now, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to Elliot Branch. Elliot is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Acquisition and Procurement, and we'll discuss a little bit more about strategic sourcing, the Navy's current acquisition plans. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Elliot Branch. Elliot is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Acquisition and Procurement. Elliot, when we took the break, I think we're going to try to start a conversation a little bit about strategic sourcing. It's a big focus currently of the administration and across government, trying to provide better value to through the acquisition process and save money. And I tie that also to total acquisition cost, and you know, I just would like to get some of your thoughts about strategic sourcing, and also if you have some examples of what the Navy is doing in that area, that'd be great.
Well, certainly, Roger. We have a broad view of acquisition and strategic sourcing in particular. There are really five major processes that we in the Navy look at when we look at acquisition. So we start with capability identification. You know, what's the need to support the warfighter? And that need is described, as you might imagine, in terms of capability. So it's not necessarily an engineered solution at that point, but it's simply what does a warfighter need to do to get his mission accomplished? And we look at that, you know, amongst all the other priorities we have from a warfighting perspective and say, is the solution a material solution, and, you know, are we lined up to it? You know, the next, you know, greatest area that we look at is this idea that I call demand management. So given that we have a need and we want to satisfy a capability with a material solution, how much of it do we need to buy? And how do we articulate that need? You know, I tease that if you go to the Naval Air Systems Command and you start down an analysis of alternatives, you know, the solution will rarely ever be a tank or a ship. It's going to be an aircraft. You know,
right.
The solution depends often on the people you ask. So the way you describe the demand, you know, has a large degree of impact on how you fulfill it. The third major area is what I like to call acquisition strategy. What does the market look like to satisfy that demand? You know, is it highly fragmented? Is it very concentrated? What terms and conditions does it use to do business? You know, what are the contract types? Is it more commercial, more strictly government, and so forth and so on? The fourth area is contract formation, really the terms and conditions, you know, the heart of the bargain. And the fifth area is contract administration. You know, how do we ensure that we're actually getting what we paid for from our industry partners? So when we look at strategic sourcing, we look at it through the lens of those five processes. And strategic sourcing in a Navy context is not necessarily putting a single contract or a very few contracts out there and trying to combine all the buying power. It's really understanding how we in the Navy generate demand and how industry satisfies that supply. So I'll give you an example of what we see as a strategic sourcing vehicle, and that would be Seaport E. Because when we first put that in place roughly 13 years ago now, at the Naval Sea Systems Command, we looked at where our program offices were going to buy support services, program management, engineering, financial management, and logistics support. And we said, they're going all over the place, and they're buying them, you know, in very conventional, you know, FAR Type 15 procurements. So why don't we consolidate those requirements or consolidate the means of meeting those requirements by putting a set of MACs in place that cover the vendors that serve that particular community across those topic areas. So what we started to understand was we had individual, demand signals coming out of our program offices, crafted, you know, slightly differently for their particular technical areas, and that we had the suppliers, to a large degree, shaped to meet those demands. That by bringing those guys together in an electronic marketplace, we could satisfy that. So we created a marketplace, Seaport, that's evolved into Seaport E, and that consisted of not only business rules, but also a set of platforms, and it allowed us to bring buyer and seller together in a very efficient way. So the focus for us in the Department of Navy, when we talk about strategic sourcing, is really this idea: understand how you generate the demand, understand how the market is organized to meet that demand, and then pick the best business model to bring those two pieces together.
Right. To me, what you described is that electronic, or it's almost like a federal marketplace, electronic based, right? That, and the key is to me that you allow the holder of the requirement, who's close, who figures out, you know, how they want to buy it and what, how to articulate it and all that requirements piece. But at the same time, you allow them to do that instead of trying to overlay some sort of, you know, Navy-wide set of requirements to a certain, you know, you,
sure. And that's one instance of strategic sourcing. But let me give you another one.
Sure.
At the other extreme. So at the other extreme, there are only about four companies in this country that really supply BlackBerry and cell phone services. Right. So now we said, we're going to have a Navy vehicle. We're going to sign up with all those guys. And you're going to go through this contract to get those kinds of services. So there's a place where probably the key success from strategic sourcing comes not from the contract formation or the acquisition strategy, but comes from demand management. Because AT&T, Sprint, you know, T-Mobile are not, and Verizon are not going to change their business practices for
right.
that small segment of the federal market. So where do we get the biggest bang for the buck? We get the biggest bang for the buck by making sure that the people who need BlackBerries are the ones who are carrying BlackBerries, that the ones who are actually carrying BlackBerries are using the BlackBerries they're carrying, and that they're using the right services and the right plans for their usage pattern. So that's where demand management, for example, figures into strategic sourcing.
Right, and that's also, you know, fundamentally understanding, you know, the commercial marketplace and who this, you know, where, like, to your point, there's only four companies who do that, right, on a nationwide basis
right.
that you really would want to leverage off of. So understanding that side of it as well is vital to that. You know, one of the things I also wanted to ask you about a little bit and just get your thoughts is it's almost like we're going down a checklist here, Elliot, is contract duplication. You know, there's a lot of conversation in the procurement community about contract duplication. You know, the companies that I deal with in the coalition are very concerned about duplicative contracts for the same or similar services on a horizontal basis, but also on a vertical basis. You know, in the context of the schedules program, I'd like to get some of your thoughts on that.
We're going to have to get better at that on both sides. We understand that they're expensive for industry to hold. And frankly, if you look at, you know, the business model, most of them are hunting licenses. So, you know, you get a multiple award contract, you still have to have the marketing apparatus, you still have to have, you know, the business development folks to go out there and develop the business. The proliferation of vehicles on our side helps us lose track of, you know, those five broad areas of emphasis that you ought to be looking at for strategic sourcing. So I think OFPP has done a very, very good job at starting to figure out how we go after that. First of all, putting a policy in place that says if you're going to put an agency-wide or an enterprise-wide contract in place, you have to really prepare a business case for that and expose that business case across government so we have some sense of you know, what everybody else is doing. And the other place we're looking very, very carefully at is Joe Jordan's strategic sourcing initiative. He's got a strategic sourcing leadership council where he is bringing in, you know, the major players in terms of procurement spend. I sit as a member of that for the Department of Navy. Dick Chinman sits as a member for DOD, General Masiello for the Air Force, and Bill McNally at NASA. You know, we see you know, others, other large agencies, energy sitting there trying to get a handle around how do we leverage this buying power, you know, this almost half a trillion dollars worth of spend across the federal government.
Right. And Elliot, right now we do have to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to Elliot Branch. Elliot is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Acquisition and Procurement. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the acquisition workforce and its status and where it's going. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today my guest is Elliot Branch. Elliot is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Acquisition and Procurement. And Elliot, when we took the break, I mentioned acquisition workforce, but I did want to continue the discussion first a little bit on contract duplication or shared services model kind of thing. And you mentioned, the C-40E contract, which is to me a shared services model in terms of providing the contract base and the infrastructure for, the folks at the requirements level to acquire the services, engineering services that they need. Can you talk a little bit? Is that something that, in terms of like the C40E, GSA schedules, or the ITJ WACs, which are at many different agencies, is that an area where you think there's opportunities to reduce contract duplication by focusing more on those, or do they need to be changed? I know it's a big question and sort of open ended, but.
Well, I think all of those things have to be considered as part of a kind of a global strategy in this space. Let me talk, very specifically about C-40E. C-40E, our governance model for C-40E is really kind of interesting. C-40E started out as a creature of the Naval Sea Systems Command. And at that time, we had in the early, 2000 time frame, what we call the virtual SysCom. So we have, six SysComs, air, sea, space and naval warfare, supply systems command, facilities engineering command, and the Marine Corps Systems Command. And the five Navy SysComs, looked at the C-40E model and said, hey, this really is a great model. And the virtual SysCom said we're going to not only adopt this for use across the Navy, but we're also going to put a governance structure in place, so that everybody's equities are heard. So we are continuously evaluating, the effectiveness of C-40E. And we will, as we go into, I think, an era of austerity, where we prioritize requirements, as well as an understanding that strategic sourcing will help us to wring every ounce of value out of every dollar we spend, we're going to be evaluating all of these vehicles, whether the Navy owns them, or whether they're owned by GSA, or whether they're owned by other government agencies.
Right. I know. I think I recall that, for example, you identified, I think a couple GWACs, including Alliant as an Alliant small business, as ones that, Navy folks were authorized to use.
We did. We have a fairly strong strategic sourcing program office in our Supply Systems Command. It acts as the executive agent for our strategic sourcing initiatives, which are led out of my office, and we looked at those development vehicles, and we said, hey, these are three or four that we think you ought to give first consideration to before you go to any other vehicles.
Right. And part of the point of those vehicles is to streamline the process, or maybe that's not, to make it more efficient and effective for both government and industry, and that's to the benefit. To help assist the acquisition workforce and the requirements development folks, I want to switch now to the acquisition workforce and get your thoughts on. I believe the acquisition workforce is under stress right now with budgetary constraints. There was the big cutback in the 90s. I don't think we fully have ever recovered from that. I know DOD has done a great job and recognized that and responding to that over the last 4 or 5 years. Where are things, I guess, from your perspective with the acquisition workforce, and where are there opportunities to assist the professional development and provide the resources?
Well, this is a stressful business. If you think about
absolutely,
if you think about what we do, You know, one of my favorite authors is a woman by the name of Jane Jacobs. And she wrote a book almost 20 years ago called Systems of Survival, A Dialogue of the Moral of Commerce and Politics. And she has a very simple but profound idea in that book, which is that human beings are the only animals on the face of the earth that we know of who trade and produce for trade. You know, and if you think about the job of a contract specialist sits at the nexus of that. You know, so we bring a requirement and resources in terms of dollars to the table. Industry brings, you know, resources in terms of human capital, facilities, you know, processes to the table. And what we do in this business is we combine those two to create surplus value out of them. So what contracting officers and contract specialists do is essentially allocate that surplus value between the two parties, and they also allocate the risk. So you know, I want listeners to understand that at its heart, this has never been an easy business. Are we under, you know, greater pressure? Sure, we're under greater pressure. You know, if you look at the austerity that the government is facing, and I think that's part of the natural cycle, then what we're asking our people to do is to squeeze, as I said before, every ounce of value out of every dollar we spend. But to draw an analogy, you don't get diamonds without pressure. So this is an opportunity for a very, very bright, hardworking cadre of young hard chargers to rise to the occasion. This isn't the first time this has happened in our history. You know, when we came into the Reagan buildup and our folks from Korea were retiring, when we were trying to professionalize the acquisition workforce during the first time, youngsters stepped up to the challenge. And I'm very optimistic that this generation of youngsters will do no less. Now, having said that, they have different pressures. You know, the kids coming out of school, you know, perhaps have a different framework on life and work balance than we had when we were coming up. So those are going to be issues. But I am confident that folks who enter this business and stay with it for any length of time are going to do great things in it.
Right. Well, along those lines, you know, one of the things that the contracting officers' responsibility is try to maximize competition to get that value. And I know you've talked a lot about competition and the role that plays. I'd like to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about that right now.
Well, you know, competition, I believe, is critical. Competition is the thing that motivates industry to get better every day, to get more cost effective every day, to provide greater qualities of service every day, and we have to pay a greater attention to competition. It's one of those things that I think the department in general has a laser-like focus on. So we're looking for every opportunity to compete when we can. And that's causing us to have to go down, if you will, you know, until to the lower working levels to see how folks are doing. So we're starting to take those moves. But you know, I'd also like to point out, you know, I've been in this business now for almost 35 years, and I've developed a theory about competition, which is that the government does not pick the winners, but the winners pick themselves. What the government really does is identifies a need, identifies a set of necessary conditions that have to be met in meeting that need. And it is those folks in industry who have the insight and the courage to bring a solution to the table that benefits the government who win. We just recognize them through contract award, but the winners really pick themselves.
Well, right now we do have to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to Elliot Branch in our last segment. Elliot is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Acquisition and Procurement, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today my guest is Elliot Branch. Elliot is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Acquisition and Procurement. And Elliot, one of the things that's interesting in the time we live in, right, is that you know, the shift in focus from, I guess, the Atlantic European, you know, sector for the Department of Defense more to a Pacific view. And I just wondered, what does that mean, you know, for the procurement system. What do you see or not see at this point, how it translates or affects what you do on a daily basis?
Well, you know, when you talk about the procurement system, the answer to that really is a look backward, because it is about the systems that we have bought in the past and what we know about those systems. And our Navy Marine Corps team is they're extremely flexible, agile systems. So as the strategy, changes in the short run, we believe that we can use those systems and we can flex those systems to meet national security needs. So what will happen is what always happens. As we use those capabilities and we understand, more richly the environment in which we use them, the war fighters will come up with the need for capability, and that five-part cycle will start over again. So they'll come up with capability needs, and our technical community will sit down and turn those into engineered solutions, and the acquisition system will go to work.
Right. Well, following up on that, and I could ask it as what keeps you up at night when you think about, your job and what's going on and your responsibility for the Navy's procurement system. But you could also look at it, is that a key challenge? Is thinking forward, thinking, looking back to look forward, where are there opportunities to further improve?
Multiple
questions there, Elliot.
Roger,
you can handle them. I know that.
I have to say the only thing that keeps me up at night is the excitement that I get by getting to come in and do this in the morning. This is a really interesting business.
That's better than my bad back there.
This really is a fascinating business. And I believe that we as Americans are an interesting people. Because I think this is an aspirational nation. So we have what I like to call these generational conversations about what it means to be an American and what that means in terms of where we're going to put our time and talent on the world stage. And I think we're in one of those phases now. So there are a lot of issues out there. Don't let me, say it's all easy, because it's not. This is some of the hardest stuff we will ever do. But sitting where I sit, I get to look at history as it's being made, and that is one of the coolest things in the world. So if I'm losing any sleep, it's because I can't wait to get up and do this again.
Well, that leads me to it's a great segue to my next question, Elliot, and that is it's always interesting to talk to folks who work in the procurement system as to, why they got into it first, how'd they get into it first, and then why did you continue to make it your career?
Well, that is interesting. I tell people I'm a classically trained accountant. I went to business school and came out and thought, my path was to be a CPA, and I got an opportunity to go to work for an accounting firm. And I realized within the first 60 to 90 days that if I had to do this for the next 40 years of my life, you'd just take me out and shoot me now. My dad was a civil servant, and we talked about what he did. He spent 35 years working for the Postal Service when it was a cabinet department, and he said, "Well, you're coming out of school, you don't know what's going to happen, so you should just take the PACE exam anyway. Have some backup." So I remember coming home from work one day, and I found a letter in my mailbox from the Navy's intern center, and they were offering me an intern position. And I said, I don't have anything to lose. I'm not happy doing what I'm doing. Let me take a chance on this stuff. So I went to work at the Navy Regional Procurement Office in Philadelphia in 1978. And, found that I was fascinated about this job. I mean, where else are you going to let a 22, 23-year-old kid do deals? I mean,
right.
it was great. Mm-hmm. And I moved from there to NAVAIR and got to work some, programs while we were building the aviation wing of the 600-ship Navy. And by the time I turned around, I'd spent 6 years there and gone to NAVC. And it was at NAVC that I started to understand two things. One, I understand that it was the complexity and the infinite variety in this business that it, you know, got me and drawn me in and kept me there. But the thing that kept me there was that was sailors. I got an opportunity as the director of Navy Shipbuilding Contracts to walk every class of ship we were building at the time, and this was in the early 90s. And as impressive as those machines were, more impressive was the young men and young women who crewed them. And I was looking back at my kids, you know, and I had a 6-year-old, a 3-year-old, and an infant. And what I started to understand was that the people who wore the uniform had raised their hands and voluntarily said, you know, I'll go do this really tough job so your kids can dream. And my every involvement that I've ever had in public service has been with that memory in mind. So I get an opportunity to come in every day and pay it forward. And I just think that's one of the greatest privileges in the world.
Well, I can't match your eloquence on that, Elliot. But I identify and I appreciate what you have to say there. My career and what I think about it is you get to work on important things. And procurement is a fundamental basis to accomplish those important things, to support those sailors and provide the tools that they need to keep us safe, you know, and free. So I appreciate that. I don't know where to go from there. I wish we could close on that, but we got a couple more minutes there, Elliot. So, one of the things that I like to ask, guest, especially someone of your background and, you know, long career, and that's not a bad thing, right? The long part. That's a good thing. You've seen a lot of changes over the time, and you mentioned earlier in the conversation, are we in one of those phases as a nation where we're looking at transition or trying to figure out where we're going to go aspirationally next? Taking it down to the level to the procurement system, you know, what are some of the, you know, more fundamental things that you've changed, that you've seen change over time that's made a difference, that's gotten more value out of the system?
Well, I think probably two things that I would note. Number one is technology. I mean, technology has just taken off in this business on both sides of the table. And the amount of technology we use in our daily work, you know, today just dwarfs the amount that we use when I came in. And let me say that's different. It's not always a good thing. I believe that there was something to be said for having to actually sit down and think about whether you wanted to write a memo or not and put everybody through the effort of running it off on the brand new Xerox machine and right. sticking it in a Holy Joe and
yes.
having somebody actually
yes.
run
I remember
it around
those.
The building.
Right.
but you cannot deny the exponential and pervasive use of technology. The other thing is I think the workforce. I mean they're better educated than we were. They have better tools. I think that this generation is one, you know, I look at my own kids that are committed to making a difference. They want to contribute, you know, and in that sense, that's not a change, but they are different. Okay. They learn differently. They think about things differently. And those are things I do think are good things. So, I think we have an opportunity. Those of us who've been around a while to help guide them without stifling that creativity and that different way of looking at the world because that is the key to progress. But, it literally is. I mean, none of us get where we are on our own. I mean,
right.
we all stand on the shoulders of giants.
Others.
So,
yeah.
so it is incumbent on us. For that workforce to be the shoulders in which off of which they peer into the future.
Well, Elliot, I want to thank you for being on the show today. It was great. I want to thank my guest, Elliot Branch. Elliot is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Acquisition and Procurement, and you have been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.